here's what it says. After the slav is given to Bnei Yisrael, toward actually the end of Parshas Va'loscha, it says the following. It says, Habasar odenu ben shineihem, perek yod alef pasuk lamed gimel, the meat was still in between their teeth, right? Terem yikares, before they were able to, whatever it is. There's no real word that you can translate for that. Va'af Hashem chorav ha'om, and the wrath of God raged against the people. Va'yach Hashem ba'om maka rabba ma'od. And God hit the people with a maka rabba ma'od. A really huge hit. A really huge hit. So what does it refer to when it says maka rabba ma'od? So the next pasuk says that Vayikra Hashem makom ahu kivros haTava. They named the place the burial place of Tava. Kisham kavros on the misavim. That's where they buried the people who had this Taiva. Okay, what was going on over here? There's something called Hisavu Taiva. It was the third thing that they had done wrong. The first thing they did wrong is they ran away from Har Sinai, like little kids running away from school. Number two, the Satsuva Shibakirbam, they had some complaints. The second thing was there were misonanim, there were complaints. And then the third one was Hisavu Taiva, that these people had a Taiva. They wanted meat. They said, like, we just can't take the mun. The mun is this empty blob that looks like absolutely nothing. And I realized that it could taste like anything you wanted to, but it's still, there's something wrong with it. They had a Taiva. They wanted something a little bit more. So what happened? They had that taiva, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the meat, and the meat killed them. And then they buried the people there, and it was called Kibros HaTava. It does not. It does not say how many. But there were people that died during that maka. So what happened? The Baal HaTorim says an awesome answer. You know what the Baal HaTorim says? He compares it to another maka rabba ma'od, and he says that the slav, when they came down, if any people were standing in the street when the slav came down, the slav went right through them. And it killed the people that were standing there waiting for the slav. It just went right through them. One of the crazier Baal HaTorim that you're going to see inside there. But that's one. That was like an Alfred Hitchcock, the birds, you know, like going around. Yeah, it killed them before they ate it.
And then it killed them also while
they were eating. And other people that were eating it, right, they died after 1 day, after 2 days, after 5 days, after 10 days, after 30 days. That's what it was.
It doesn't say that it died when they was in their teeth, not
right. And that's what it was. Basro denu ben shineim, 100% it was during there. But what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to them was, lo yom echo tol. And Rashi says that each one refers to how long it took for them to die. A day or 2 days, 10 days, 5 days, whatever it was, however bad they were, that's how long it took. But then Mako Rabba Ma'od is a very strange wording of the Pasuk. Mako Rabba Ma'od, a really great hint. What does that refer to? What's the reference over here? So the Me'ah Shiloch, the Ishbitzer, so he says the following line, and it's an unbelievable line. He says, it doesn't say the word Bayamas, and they died. It says the word by Yaakoban, by Yahashem Ba'al, Makarabmo. They got hit. So what does the hit mean? It's similar to that. He says, it's Mashma, a very precious soul was lost during these times of Klal Yisrael. A very holy neshama was lost, and that was the Makarabim Ode. The Zohar in Chilak Gimel Kufnan Vavam and Aleph says that this was Nachshon Ben Aminadav. Nachshon Ben Aminadav died at this moment when they had a taiva, and he was buried in Kibbutz Tavan. And in fact, in the Seder Olam, the Gra points out that it says that Nachshon Ben Aminadav died in the second year in the Midbar. So it says right there that from the Gra that Nachshon Ben Aminadav was buried in Kibbutz Tavan. He was buried right there in Kibbutz Tavan. That's where he went. So that's the hardest thing to understand. Nachshon Ben Aminadav was a very great man, the leader of Shevet Yehuda. How could he have this taiva? How could he have been one of the people that died in Kibbutz HaTava? How could he have had a taiva? That's number one. That's the first question. Number two, what?
Who said he was?
So, but everybody else did. Number two, how is that a maka rabba ma'od to the So he dies. It's not a maka rabba to the people.
Why not?
It's a maka rabba to him.
When Big Daddy dies.
So what does that mean? How does it affect the rest of the people? That's number two. Number three, what was the power of Nachshon Ben Aminadav over everyone else that he was so great? So we have to go back into Nachshon Ben Aminadav. Here we go. Rav Shur says the following. Moshe was named by Bitya Bas Paro, by the daughter of Paro, because Mina Mayim Mishisihu. She pulled him out of the water. The Moshe Rabbeinu was drawn out of the water. Now, a name like this definitely has an obvious connection to everything that he's going to do for the rest of his life. Because think about it. I mean, if you're going to be named Moshe, named by an Egyptian princess, then clearly it has something to do with your job and your tacos and your tafkid for the rest of your life. There's got to be something there. That means the rest of his life, he's got to be pulled out of Mayim. So what does that mean, that he's got to be pulled out of Mayim? There are four Yesodos to the world. Four Yesodos. And it's not like Captain Planet, although it's very close. There's Ofer, dirt. There's Eish, fire. There's Ruach, wind. And there's there's mayim, water. I said, it's not like Captain Planet. You take out the heart, because that's a human characteristic. Take those four. And they say that, and they connect those things. I'm not into that so much, but that's what they get into. They say that each one of these Dalet Yesodos, each connects to a different type, I know. There's some great stuff with this. But they say that each one connects to a different problem that people have. Kina, Taiva, Kavod, and I'm not so sure what the fourth one is. And I couldn't look it up because I was on the plane when I was writing this. So I know it's Kina, Taiva, and Kavod, and I'm so sure when the fourth one was. Mayim stands for Taiva. So if you're Mashui Mina Mayim, if you're pulled out from the water, what does that mean?
You have no
Taivas. All your Taivas are gone. There's no Taiva there. There's no Sheikhist any Taiva. So what happened was, is that Moshe Benu was able to be so pulled out of Taiva. He was so taken away from the Taivas of this world. There was nothing there. Moshe Benu was perfect. That's why the food that Moshe Benu gave them was the mud. It had no Taiva. It was an impossibility. It was discos Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu's whole idea was to be pulled out of Taiva. So when Bnei Yisrael are connected to Moshe Rabbeinu, what ends up happening? They're also pulled away from Taiva. So therefore they eat the man and they don't have any complaints and everything's all good. They're Moshe Mimayim. But the problem is, what happens when they're not into the water? When they're not into Moshe Rabbeinu? Then they're mamish, they're into the Taivas that they have, then they're going to have the complaints. So what happened over here? All of a sudden they start Yisabu Taiva, they start having complaints, they start having these issues, everything gets brought up in front of them. What happened? Must mean they had a disconnect from Moshe Rabbeinu.
Nachshon jumped into the water.
Oh, very good. Hold on a second. Nachshon, the name is Nachash and Vav Nun at the very end. Now, again, I am taking Rav Shur's word for this. Anything that has a Vav Nun at the end of the word belittles what it is. So a Nachash is a big snake. A Nachshon is a small snake. Meaning something that knocks down the snake into something there. What's the Nachash? We know what the Nachash is. The Nachash is the Yetzirah. The Nachash is the Malach HaMavet. The Nachash is everything bad that you can possibly imagine. His koach is to make you want something that you don't really need. To make you have that desire, that taiva, to have something that you don't really need. You don't need that at all. Mitzrayim was about this taiva. All of Egypt was about getting into your taivas and do whatever you want. Go with the Arayis. Go with the Avodah Zarah. Go with whatever there is out there. Get rid of that taiva by jumping into Kriyas Yamsu. The whole idea of Kriyas Yamsu, of splitting up the sea, of knocking it down and going right in the middle, the idea behind that was to knock them down from the taivas that they were in. So once they split the sea and they went through the sea, that means they're mushroom imayim. They're taken away from water. So when did they start getting them on? Only after they had Kriyas Yamsu. You look in Parshat B'Shalach, it goes through Kriyas Yamsu, but after they come out of Kriyas Yamsu, that's when a Kodesh Baruch Hu decides, no, now I'm going to give them the month. The reason why is because even though they were in the Midbar for 6 days before they went to Kriyas Yamsu, but they weren't yet Mashui Min HaMayim. They weren't yet taken out from the Taiva. They still had those Taivas. So what happened at Kriyas Yamsu? What was there? Bnei Yisrael was stuck with nowhere to go. Absolutely nowhere to go. They couldn't go back. They couldn't go to the sides. All they could do was jump into the water in front of them. It started to be miayish, and that's also a trick of the stuff in the Yitzhara. Give up. There's nothing for you to go for. You have nowhere to go, nothing to do. What's going to happen? You might as well just give up now. There's no reason to try any harder. That's the Yitzhara. There's no way out. There's always a way out. Jump into the water. Split the water. Make those taivas go away. Get rid of your ruts on what you want to do and start realizing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do. Start realizing what you need, not what you want. So what did Nachshon do? Nachshon jumps into the Yam Suf and makes the whole thing split. He throws out the water. Nachshon ben Aminadav took the Nachash, took the Yetzer Hara of Taiva and destroyed it. Destroyed it. Knocked it down completely. He was able to destroy everything that he needed to do. He belittled that Taiva, and that's the Nachshon, and he caused the Kriya of the Mayim, destroying all of Bnei Yisrael's desire to do anything bad. That's the koach of the Nachash that he was able to take care of. And that's why Nachshon, who's the Nasi of Shevi Yehudi, the Melech, he's the one who's going to give birth eventually to David HaMelech. David HaMelech is going to eventually give birth to Mashiach. This is the idea behind everything that's going around there. This is exactly what happened when they had this power, when they were able to do everything that they needed to do. You know, throughout the Doros, all the Gedolim that we've had have had this power of being able to suppress their Taivas. being able to knock down their taivas. You know the Chassam Sofer, at the age of eight, said, I'm not going to eat sugar or chocolate for the rest of my life. You know why? Because there's a shaila on what bracha you make on sugar and chocolate. There's a shaila. Why? Because technically sugarcane is a plant. So maybe you should make adama on it. Chocolate comes from a bean. So it's possible you make adama, maybe even an eight.
Well, it is.
I just have to have chocolate. One side?
You can only make an adama so you know what it
is. So there's shilas and different things in the Gemara. What to do about sugar, what to do about chocolate. So Chassam Sofer, when he heard that there were shilas on it, even though we paskin that you make a shahakol on sugar and on chocolate, he had such a shila on it, he said, forget it. I'm not eating it anymore. And he stopped eating sugar and chocolate for the rest of his life. For the rest of his life.
Yeah, but what do you do? Oh, if it's ingredients in there, it won't make a difference.
Then it's different. Then it's totally different. But he stopped himself from the rest of his life. He refused to eat it unless... Yeah, he probably had when it was added on.
Chocolate rugelach.
Yeah, chocolate rugelach or something like that. He probably added it on to something else, but he wouldn't eat a chocolate. He's a kid. He's 8 years old. 8 years old, he's able to do this. Let's go to the other side of the spectrum. Let's go.
Sugar directly. They couldn't eat sugar straight. He would always mix it with something.
No, sugar cubes. That's what they used to eat.
Candy.
Little kids used to all eat sugar cubes. They didn't have like regular candies.
Candy. But
they ate. No, they didn't have candy. 100 years ago.
Candy sugared as regular.
They had sugar cubes. That's what they used to eat.
That's disgusting.
It's what they ate, but that's what they ate. That's what they ate. That's all they had.
No, but that's already mixed with something. It's already mixed. It's already made.
Yeah, once you have it in something else, then it's different.
Sugar with sugar?
Sugar, yeah, well, if it's all sugar, that would be a different thing. Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe was once asked, it was asked to Reb David Feinstein. They said, does your father open up a refrigerator door on Shabbos? It's a shiloh because the motor might be running or whatever. So they asked Reb David Feinstein, what do you hold? So Reb David said, you know, I never asked my father about what he did, you know, whether or not he can open up the door, so I'm not so sure what my father would say. And so what did your father do? Did your father ever open up the door, the refrigerator door on Shabbos? So Reb David Feinstein looked at him and said, I never saw my father open the refrigerator door in his life. Ever. They said, what do you mean? He said, he sat down at the table. Whatever the Rebbetzin brought to him, he ate. Whatever the Rebbetzin brought to him, he ate. He never had a taiva to go for a snack to open up the refrigerator door and take anything from there. He never did that. That's not what he did. If there was nothing on the table, he didn't eat. He didn't go searching for food. He didn't, whatever the Rebbetzin wanted to serve him, that was that, and that was this. Okay, I'm not saying that you shouldn't go to this, you know, help out your wife. No, I'm not saying that. Yeah, but it is, it's tremendous, especially if your wife's not going to serve you. Yeah, that's not the story that you want to say over. But the idea is, if being around, you know, I was on the plane, and I couldn't remember who said this story, but there was a guy that went in and said, my Rebbe is an unbelievable Rebbe. He's an unbelievable Rebbe. He's one of the greatest Rebbe out there. He said, what's so great about this Rebbe? He said that he doesn't put his head to the soup spoon. He puts the soup spoon to his mouth. So they're like, what? Like, what's so great about that? He said, try it. I forgot who it was, and I can't remember who it was exactly. So the person who did it tried. It wasn't like, he wasn't sitting up there with like the perfect, no, we're not talking about manners where he's sitting up straight and going like that or anything like that. The Rebbe would sit the normal way, but instead of like leaning his face forward, he would just put it straight inside his mouth. And he wouldn't have like an overflowing spoon full of soup that would like spill all over him. He's going, he had like a little bit of soup and brought it to his mouth. So the people that they were talking to were like, that's nothing. So they tried it. So they said, the Rav of the town said, that Rebbe can't do anything. Anybody could do that. They said, okay, let's try it tonight. So the Rav went, and he took this soup spoon, and he picked it up, and was using it, and right before he put it to his mouth, he leaned forward just a little bit to sip it up. He went like, just like that. So like, try it again. He's like, no, now I see the godless of that Rebbe. Now see the godless of the Rebbe. It's understanding that a taiva means you lean toward the taiva. It's hard to be able to take the thing and to put it to your mouth and mamish mean it. Because I don't want the taiva. I know I have to eat, so I'll bring it to my mouth. I don't have to lean forward to eat it. But that's the idea of what these people were trying to do, what these tremendous Talmidei Chacham were trying to do. It's a huge avoda.
That you're supposed to have hanaah from all the things that you're
without
the pleasures of the world.
You have to understand where you're supposed to get hanaah, where it's just
eating,
for your voice.
There's a point. 100%.
100%. The point is to get around certain ideas. To get around, there's no question that there's hanoah that is to be gotten in this world. However, it's how far do you have to go? Do you have to go so far that you're getting taiva out of anything and everything, and every time you eat, it has to be something that's mamish, the greatest tasting thing in the world?
These are bands that you speak of. Aren't they going to the opposite end where it's almost in a way like disrespectful to God? Here he created food. and you're like not, you're like almost in a way disrespecting it.
I hear it. I don't hear it enough to say that that's a problem. Yeah, we have to do. If you look in Ali Shur in the third Ali Shur by Ravovi in the third Shar, when he starts going into the ideas of taiva and how to work on your taiva, so those things that'll take a share in and of itself. That's a couple pages. He goes into what's a taiva and what you need. How do you understand the difference between the two? That's something.
How do you understand? No, not just what you see. I'm but you see it as two like very very different things.
Yes.
Like, one is what you need, and one is a taiva. But there's a middle ground of
100%, 100%, and there's the normal ground, the normative ground. But that's not something we're going to go into right now. I'm giving you the extremes. I am giving you the extremes. But I'm just telling you, this is what the power was of Moshe Noam, to have the man and have no taiva whatsoever. So when Bnei Yisrael started being Hisabu taiva, that's when it all ended. Bnei Yisrael no longer had that connection back to Kriyas Yam Suf. Bnei Yisrael were now affected by Nachshon ben Aminadav, by the Nachash of Nachshon's name. That means that Nachshon himself lost his koach, and at that moment, he died. His power to split up Klal Yisrael, to split up the Mayim, to have Klal Yisrael, Mashui Mina Taiva, Mashui Mina Mayim, to be taken away from Mayim, was now totally gone. And there was nothing left. Not one little bit was left for that idea, and that's why
what
Nachash.
What did Bnei Yisrael do that all of a sudden that
we don't? So it seems that. Oh, you know what? Give me a second. Give me 1 second. It seems also, by the way, that Nachash is the gematria of Mashiach. Why? Because the Nun, when split up, becomes Mem Yud, which is for Mayim, which is the idea behind the water. That if you take the Nun of the Nachash and you split it up and you turn it into the Mem and the Yud, that saves you from the Nachash's power, and that brings Mashiach. And that's why Mashiach comes from Nachshon ben Aminadav. That's the idea behind Nachshon ben Aminadav. That power of Nachshon was given over to Mashiach. That's the idea of splitting yourself up in water. So let's, okay, so now, here's your question.
Mashiach has this, I mean, Mashiach has the same gematria as Nachash.
Yes.
So what's the...
Meaning the Mashiach is going to be able to destroy the powers of the Nachash. But what do you have to do to destroy it? You have to make it into water. You got to split those waters.
Is it going
to
destroy it, or does it have the kokos of the Nachash?
Destroy it. Destroy it. Destroy it. There's nothing... We can't get that.
How do we know there wasn't Nachash ben Aminadav's death, which made that...
It should be the opposite, because only afterward was the Maka Rabba Ma'od. It was after they already got the meat, and then it was Maka Rabba Ma'od. That's what it should be. But still, where did that taiva come from? That's your question, Nyama. Where did that taiva come from? So I've got two answers for you. One is Lipish, the other is Hasidish. You guys pick whichever one you want better. Okay? It's good answers. Both of them have a bit of a story. Chavetz Chaim says their minds were sunk so far into taiva. My assumption is it happened through Avera Guerreras Avera. They ran away from Har Sinai. They started to complain a little bit. All of a sudden, they got so sunk into the tumah that they had, they started having a taiva. They started getting involved in the taiva. It became ingrained into their system, and they couldn't stop themselves from having that taiva. They couldn't stop themselves from doing it. But Rav Shor says it a little bit different. Rav Shor says, "His avu taiva." They wanted to have a taiva. Not that they actually had the taiva. They wanted to have the taiva. Now, what does that mean? They didn't really have one. Because the mun was so pure, there was no way to have taiva. At that time, they couldn't even get themselves to have a taiva. The Yitzhara wasn't within their system. Yitzhara was outside their system, similar to Adam Arishon Kodem Achet. Adam Arishon before the Chet, the Yitzhara was the Nachash. Outside of them, yelling at them, telling them, eat from the tree, eat from the tree. You could still be convinced, but it was on the outside of you as opposed to within you. And that's what was happening over here. Nachshon ben Aminadav took the Nachash and put it outside of them. That didn't mean they couldn't make a decision. So how did they make this decision to go ahead and have this taiva? Why did they want this taiva? What happened over here? So what's the purpose of taiva? Why do we have taiva in this world? Why is there such a thing called taiva in this world? Says the Chofetz Chaim, to become a better person, to be matzliach. And we say it in Uvalatzil, Laman lo niga larik velo neled lebahola. So we don't do everything we do for nothing. And we weren't born to just be nobodies in this world. Who wants to live a life without a purpose or a desire? Everybody wants a purpose. I'm sitting on the plane. Okay, and the person sitting next to me, I was sitting next to a really, really large woman. It was very, yeah, I mean, I was going to ask, it was awkward. Okay, anyway, I'm not the person who asked to move. almost. I leaned all the way to the left side because I was on by the window side, and she was. It was a two-seater apart, and I, you know, and on the way to Eretz Yisrael, like I can ask to move or something like that, but yeah, I'm not going to ask to move. It doesn't. There's nothing you can do. No, she was a rather large lady, and it was good because listen, the other alternative is a very good-looking girl, and that's much much worse. So this is much much better than this. There was nothing wrong, but there was a lady. There was a lady on the other side of that woman on the other side of the aisle. Clearly a feminist. And clearly not a feminist, like an environmentalist, everything, right? So she had her plastic cup that she had her drink in, you know, when they give out the drinks, because that's all they give you because they're cheap. So they gave out in this plastic cup this drink, and she said, where do I recycle the cup? So the person, the steward, I think, said to her, you know, we don't have any ability to recycle plastic on the plane. She said, when will you have the ability to recycle on the plane? And I cracked up. I didn't mean to, but I was like listening to the conversation. I'm just like, what kind of an assumption is that? So I didn't, you know, I knew I had my keep on, and I was clearly a Jew, and I was like, whatever, and I was sitting there, you know, and I just like, I went like that to my side. Because everybody has to have a purpose. There are people whose purpose in life is mamish to just make sure that everyone is environmentally sound. Now, okay, I'm not like that guy who like goes and burns rubber in the street, you know, to kill the ozone layer. Obviously, I don't want to destroy the ozone layer, you know, but I'm not like crazed about like every plastic cup has to be thrown into some sort of recycling machine. I don't mind recycling, but I don't like make it a point that everybody should recycle. But other people who don't have the Torah, so what do they do with their lives? They got to do something. How many millions of dollars are given over to politicians for them to raise money to be able to what? To become the mayor? To do what? Millions are given to them. Millions. How much did President Obama make? Not make, I'm sorry. How much did he use in his campaign? Yeah, hundreds of millions of dollars. That's unbelievable. Because everybody has to have something. There's PETA, for goodness sake. What else could you... I mean, seriously. Why in the world could there be... And the famous story, and I've said it before, but the vice president of PETA, I forgot what her name is, and I could look it up, and I was on the computer. So the vice president, she was... They have a rule that you can't use any medicines that have been tested on animals. So they looked it up, and somebody caught her. The vice president was using a medicine that had been tested on animals, and she had a certain disease. The only disease is curable. The only way that it's curable is by this thing that has been tested on animals. So she went ahead and she's using it. So they caught her and they said, you're using it? She said, well, yeah, because I have to live to go fight the rights for the rest of the animals. If I die, who's going to take up their rights? So you're arguing that other people should just die and not use this medicine. Well, you're taking it yourself. It's just like such... But they all have to do something. You have to do something because you can't live a life without any type of purpose, without any type of anything. Sfasama says it a bit more Hasidish. And here's the Hasidish abort. The taiva was created to have a bren, to have yislavos, to have a fire within you, to have that avodas Hashem working on you, to be mevatel your own will, and to be able to build you up. What's the taiva for? The taiva is to say to yourself, I have a taiva to learn. I have a taiva to do everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do. I have a taiva to daven. B'nai Yisrael were in the midpoint, and they wanted to go up in their avoda. They just sat there and they said, we want to make our avoda the greatest avoda there could possibly be. But they had no taiva to improve in their avoda. There was no taiva there. All the taiva was gone. All they had was the mun, which made things complacent, which made them all sound and hashkafically okay. And everything that they needed, they were just sitting down and all perfectly fine and everything was good. But there was no bren, there was no fire saying to them, let's go further, let's do more, let's do more, let's do more. There was nothing like that for them. This taiva wasn't strong enough for them. So they sat there and they said, you know what? Hisavu taiva. We want to have a taiva. So similar to Adam Arishon before the Chait. Said Adam Arishon, I want to be able to have a Yetzer Hara to fight it. To be able to fight my Yetzer Hara. To go up against my Yetzer Hara and say, no. No, I don't want to do this. To fight the Yetzer Hara and to make the choice on our own. That's what the Isavu Taiva was. They were wrong. They should have been Someh on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They should have allowed what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, and they should have just eaten the man, and that was good enough. They shouldn't have complained. But it's such a line. That's what the Bnei Yisrael were doing, and that's why they were out there. So if you want to go with the Chofetz Chaim that they got so into Taiva they couldn't help themselves, that's one thing. The Hasidish way of looking at it is, no, he's Avu Taiva. They so badly wanted to be in the Matzav of Taiva, and they knew that if they got into Taiva they could fail miserably. But Bnei Yisrael didn't fail. They were successful. Kivro Satava is that they buried their taiva. they grabbed the taiva and they buried it. And they made sure they didn't have that taiva grow onto them. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I know that that's what you want, but you're going about it in the wrong way. Don't force me to give you a taiva. I'll tell you when you need taiva. I'll tell you when everything's going to be all good. Be okay with what you have, with the mon that you have. You don't have to worry about that. And? What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, number one was their taiva, but later on, they kind of go the other, they're kind of wishy-washy, because with the Meraglim, they want to stay in the Midbar. Because they don't want
and that's taiva. Something that we have to talk about soon. What that idea was going to the Midbar. I do want to point out, though, Makkah, Rabbah, Me'od, Ma'od is the Gematria of Adam. Same letters as Adam Rishon. Because the whole thing was based on Adam Rishon's decision. But just like Adam Rishon's decision, although it was the best thing for the rest of the people for all time, it was still a chait, and it still caused death to come into the world, so too this decision that they made. Although it was a great decision for Klal Yisrael, brought them to higher levels of their Avodas Hashem, but it was a chait, and they got punished for it. And they were punished very badly, to the point of death. Death was brought in because of that.
How can you even say that they brought them to a higher level than they've ever been? Because that was like a great... Well, don't we say that they were the greatest? The Dora Midbar was the greatest generation there was.
100%.
We've never been that high. So in fact, they actually... We've never been as great...
A great line. They were on such a level. Whether or not they actually could have gone any further, could they have gotten any further, that's what they wanted. We don't know. Maybe there wouldn't have been Dora Midbar if they didn't do this. Maybe they would have never gotten to that point. Who knows what would have happened? We don't know. We have absolutely no idea. All we know is what we're given, and this is what ended up happening. So now, while we're on the Hasidic level, now we got there, it's the backward nuns. Still those backward nuns by the Even Sarum. Look in the Parsha. You'll see those backward nuns. Where is it? Right over here, right before Perek Yud Aleph. And all of a sudden, it goes through, they ran away from Har Sinai. Backwards nun, by Even Sarum, by Yom HaShem, Kuma HaShem, Be'afutsu Adachav, Yonis V'nisnach Mipanecho, Uvnucho Yomar, Shuv HaShem Rivavos Alfi Yisrael. Then a backwards nun. Everybody knows what that stands for. The backwards nun is supposed to be its own separate parsha. You know why? There's not Chamisha Chumshei Torah. This is wrong. It's Shiva Sifrei Torah. Shiva. There are seven Sifrei Torah, says the Gemara. Seven. The beginning of Bamidbar up until Vayibin Soharon. Vayibin Soharon. And then afterward comes the rest of Ba'aluscha till the end of Sefer Bamidbar. Is all three Sifrei Torahs. You have Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra, beginning of Bamidbar, Vayibin Soharon, end of Bamidbar, and Devarim. Seven Sifrei Torah altogether. How can this be its own Sifrei Torah? I mean, it stinks, right? I mean, well, Bereishis is huge. Shmos is huge. Vayikra is huge. And then Bamidbar getting a little bit smaller. Then Vayibin Soharon, this is 85 letters. We have a Sefer Torah that's 85 letters, a whole Sefer Bifnei Atzmo that's 85 letters. So how is it so short? Okay, this is an awesome, awesome vort by Rav Wolfson. What's our purpose in Golus? What are we doing while we're sitting in our exile and just sitting around in all other places? It's not to not know why we're in certain places, or where we're going, or what we'll do when we get there. It's not to know that. We're not supposed to know that. We have no Nevi'im, no prophets, we can't hear a bas kol, none of us have Ruach HaKodesh. It's not what we're supposed to do. But keep growing as far as we can, as much as we can, while we're in this state, this matziv, of not doing so well. Keep growing even then. There's nitzotzos HaKadosha, sparks of Kedusha hidden throughout the world. Throughout the world. And when we're Zocha, we are able to go to those places and daven. Maybe even learn on a plane. Or daven in an airport. Or sit in certain places while we're traveling and going on vacation in all these different places throughout the entire world. And grabbing in those nitzotzei kedusha, those sparks of holiness, by davening, by making brachos, by learning in those areas, by doing whatever it is, by showing what it means, by making a kiddush Hashem, showing what it means to be a true Jew, and we're pulling it back. If we were in Eretz Yisrael and everything was all perfect, all the nitzotzei kedusha would come to us. We would sit in Eretz Yisrael and they would come to us automatically. But as of right now, we're not that holy. We can't do that. We can't let them come to us. We have to go to them. And that's why we travel all over the world. That's why we are everywhere. But when Mashiach comes, that's when the Nun Share Bina come back, the 50 gates of wisdom, the 50 gates of understanding of the Torah come back, and then we're going to have the full Tikkun. But right now, we got a backwards Nun. We don't see the Nun Share Bina. We don't see anything. And in fact, we're in the Nun Shari Tuma. It's a backwards Nun. Vayihi b'nsoa ha'aron. You know what the pshat is behind this entire parsha? It's our travels throughout the Midbar. Not the Midbar per se. Our travels in Golos. This sefer is a sefer about us. This is our travels. The Aron Kodesh is referring to Bnei Yisrael. And what does Hashem do? Vayomer Moshe, Kuma Hashem v'yafut soy v'achaminu sumis nechem v'panecha. Any enemies that come up. V'yisham d'alav v'sinu v'lo shelo echem dovad amai v'leinu l'chal v'sinu. It's not just one nation that gets destroyed. El Hashem v'chol dor v'dor. Omdim aleinu l'chal v'sinu. V'akadosh Baruch Hu matzil leinu miyadam. That's this Parsha. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us from anything bad that comes up during that time. You know what it stands for? Mem Nun Samach Ayin. I heard a very similar word from Rabbi Fine Torsky. I'm switching it a little bit. Mem is Mitzrayim. Nun is the 50 days that we left Mitzrayim. Samach is at Har Sinai. And the Ayin is after that. We went to the Ayin Umos Olam. We went to 70 nations of the world. By Heben Soa Aaron.
What's Mem Nun Samach Ayin?
Just the letters. You should know they darshan out like Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet,
Hei,
Vav, Zayin.
Oh, okay, you're that's okay,
so I'm going through the letters, and I'm just saying that's Mem Nun Samach Ayin. That's what it stands for. The Mitzrayim, Nun days in the Midbar to Har Sinai to where we go to the Ayin Umos Olam. Here's the pshat. It's such an unbelievable word. The Nuns are backward, and right now we're only Zocha to 85 letters of an entire Sefer Torah that speaks about every single thing that happens to us when we're in Golos. This Sefer is a Sefer about us. It's our Sefer. It's what happens to us in Golos Edom. And everything that has ever happened to us while we're in Golos is here. In this, Uvenucho Yomar, when we rest, it'll be Shuva Hashem Rivavos Alfi Yisrael, where the thousands of millions of Bnei Yisrael come back to Eretz Yisrael. That's what's going to be at the very, very end. Right now, we only got 85 letters. So what's going to be? Lasid Lavo, says Rav Wolfson, the 85 letters are going to stretch out. Each letter, instead of being a Vav, it's going to be a Vav, Aleph, Vav. The Yud, it's going to be a Yud, Vav, Dud. Yud, Vav, Dalet. The He, is going to be a He, Aleph. The Yud is going to be another Yud, Vav, Dalet. The Beis is going to be a Beis, Yud, Saf. It's going to spell itself out. And the letters that are formed from the Miluim, from everything that comes from these letters, there's going to be Miluim of Miluim of Miluim of Miluim. It's going to stretch itself out. And the letters are going to rearrange themselves. And they're going to show us everything that has happened from the beginning of Golos Edom until the end of Golos Edom. How we traveled through the Midbar, traveled through all the Golias that we've been through. It's going to mention the Holocaust, it's going to mention the Inquisition, it's going to mention the Crusades, it's going to mention everything. Who are we to go through this stuff?
No,
who are we to go
through? Taking it and just spell out all the letters and continue to
you know,
spell out
say,
what comes out?
You spell the letters, but then those letters, you spell out the letters.
I know,
letters.
You keep going. And then, put a
do you understand, what this is? How many letters are there in the Torah? How many letters are there in the Torah?
That'd be awesome.
How many letters? 600,000 letters in the Torah, say Chazal. But the problem is there's only 301,000 letters in the Torah. So how is it going to work, 301,000 letters to 600,000? Because this Parsha is really 290,000 letters. It's not 85. It itself is 290,000 letters. We're just not seeing them. Because in Golos, we don't see it. This Sefer is the biggest Sefer of them all. But right now it's the smallest, because we don't see what we're supposed to do in Golos. This is the real Parsha. This is the Parsha that has everything to do with us. Perhaps those Miluim will come out, and each one of them will show us, yeah, we might be in there. We might be in there. There might be our names inside there saying, and this is what Aaron did on this certain day. Or Yissi, or David, or Binyamin, or whatever. And each person, it has those lines of what this person did when they were in Golos.
Just keep them close.
There's going to be a Korach. There's going to be a Moshe Rabbeinu. There's going to be an Aaron. There's going to be a Miriam. There's going to be Tzadikim. There's going to be, throughout this Golos, there are people that are going to be mentioned. There are people that are going to be here. It's the biggest Sefer of all the six. And all our Masos will come out and it'll be so understood. And we'll sit there and be like, now it's under, now I get it. Now we see exactly what the point of Golos is. But now, all we got is, the Aron moves, Bnei Yisrael move, God gets rid of our enemies, and when we rest, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring us back to Eretz Yisrael and everything will be all good. That's all we got. 85 letters. All we got. Bizchus Pehei. Bizchus the Mila, which is the Gematria of 85. Bizchus that Bris Mila that we give our children. It's because everything that we do that has to do with that prismila, keeping our Judaism intact, that's what's going to give us those 600,000 letters back. That's what's going to tell us everything that we're going to have. And I have a remnant for it. And I thought of this. I said it over to Rabbi Schechter and to Rabbi Weinberg last night. I wanted to see if they heard anything like this. I've never understood this. Eldad and Medad prophesy in the camp. They make a prophecy. They have a nevuah. What's the nevuah? Moshe Mace, Yoshua Machnes. Moshe is going to die. Yoshua is going to bring them there to Israel. Every nevuah has a purpose. What in the world is the purpose of this nevuah? What's the point? Why did they need to know this? What in the world were they doing prophesying this? Why is this a prophecy?
They didn't want him to go suddenly.
It didn't happen for 39 years. So I'm asking, what in the world is Pshat behind Moshe, Mesiel, Shua, Machnas? Eldad and Medad were prophesying around everybody in Klal Yisrael. And Yoshua thought it was so bad. Moshe Rabbeinu, destroy them. Put them in jail. Do something to them, Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, what are we going to do? What changed? What happened? Okay. There's always parts of our life that we don't understand. But at the end of the day, we have to understand that God's in charge. And God will do everything. Here's the idea, I think, behind the prophecy. Even though Moshe will die, even though bad things will happen, don't worry, Yoshua will bring us to Eretz Yisrael. Telling us, no matter what happens, no matter who dies, no matter who goes down, no matter what, even if Nachshon Ben Aminadav, the king of Klal Yisrael, dies in the middle of the Midbar by Kivros HaTava, don't worry. Somebody is going to take over. Somebody's going to bring a star to Israel. He might not be on the same level. Maybe nobody will get to the level of Nachshon Ben Aminadav. Maybe nobody will be on the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu. We know that's true. Yoshua is not on the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu. But somebody will bring us in. It's a system. It's like the New England Patriots with Bill Belichick. Even if somebody goes down, somebody could just be plugged in. Okay, Lahavdil. Somebody can still be plugged into the system and the system still works. It's such a good system. It works. And you don't need the players necessarily. It's good to have a Tom Brady. But even without Tom Brady, the New England Patriots still made the playoffs. You can still make the playoffs with the system, even without the greatest quarterback there. Because it's the system and then you plug in somebody else in there. Even if Moshe, Mace, Yoshua will still be Machnas Bnei Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the system. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making it all work. Maybe not as great and maybe not as good, but that's that. And that's why Miriam and Aaron got in so much trouble speaking Lashon Hara at the end of the Parsha. Why? Because there's a secret behind everything. There's something behind the scenes. You don't understand why Moshe Rabbeinu was Porish from Tzipora? It's because you don't get it. Because you don't get it just yet. And I'm sorry you don't get it. But you will. And that's this Parsha. 85 letters that will turn into millions. Millions. It will give us, well, really, hundreds of thousands. Trust him. It's going to be there for you. In summary, Nachshon Ben Aminadav pulled us away from Taiva. He was mushing us from Taiva. And he died when we pulled ourselves back into Taiva. Bnei Yisrael's Havamina was noble, but it was wrong nonetheless. To want a Taiva is noble. A tremendous idea, like Adam Rishon. But it's wrong nonetheless. But they were Matzliach. And those people that did live, they were Matzliach. And we're missing a safer of our travels, but that safer is going to return, and that's the safer of Ayyub and Soharim. It will come back, and it will be brought back to us, and that was the idea of the prophecy behind Eldad and Medad. We're going to stop with that. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.